Okay, here we go.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and time.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network. I'm your host, Fran Lewis, and this is dedicated to all those veterans out there that gave up their lives and those that are still serving their country. And this is a very, very special show. We are going to talk about a very special book that is very compelling. It's called In Thy Mother's Honor. The author is Ian Wayning, and he grew up in Chicago. No one can fully understand the terror, the unbelievable pain that is experienced in the war unless they've been there in the middle of the action. Vietnam vet Ian Wayning recalls his own personal memories, nightmares, and anguish continuing today after years of service in Thy Mother's Honor. And we're going to talk about the book, and I am so excited that you're here. And for those of you that are out there listening, if you have any questions, my Facebook wall is up. So, why did you decide to write the story and share it with everyone? And I'm really glad you did.
Fran, thank you for allowing me to be on the show and your listeners for taking their time to listen. I, fortunately, unfortunately, have been seeing psychs and a trauma specialist for multiple continuous years. And the trauma specialist, after probably 7-8 years of pulling stuff out from my combat time, suggested that I put this in writing because he felt it was a story that could possibly help many other vets and also help me with my PTSD I go through. And he felt that if it was down in writing, the time I took to do it, and maybe finally being able to talk to hopefully some people, that it might ease my mind. So that was the reason that I finally decided to write the book after about 7 years of him trying to make it happen.
Well, I'm glad you did, because I think this is very important. So I want to ask you, why did you want to focus, how did you feel when you finally knew that you had to go to Vietnam, and how did you focus on how you felt about your men? That must have been difficult the first time you had a tour.
Well, I actually volunteered to go to Vietnam. I won't say that I didn't. I volunteered to go there, so I was willing to go and wanted to see, for some reason, what combat was like. In getting there, my first day getting off the plane opened my eyes up to a whole new world that I naturally was not aware of. It isn't what TV is about. It isn't what the movies are about. Fractions of that are reality, trying to get to the point. But as we got off the plane that day, I'm a Marine, and as we were offloading the plane that today, they were loading on many, many caskets of the dead bodies, and the gunnery sergeant that was standing there greeting us off the plane, all he, as we got off the plane, just basically said, look to your left at the caskets, and said, if you don't listen to what you're told to do here and you don't follow orders, that'll be you. And that was our greeting to Vietnam, beside the stench and the mold in the air of Vietnam.
Oh my God. That is scary. I mean, they should have appreciated the fact that you were even there.
Yeah, but I guess at that time, they want to make you aware this isn't, again, this is reality. This is now a life you're going to go into, and they wanted to get your sense maybe to heighten to its full extent so that you were ready to receive whatever was about to come.
You have to be pretty strong to be able to do that. I don't know how many people could actually deal with that and come out even sane.
Yeah, the training of all the different militaries gets you ready in my mind, but again, they can never get you ready to actually experience. Pound it into your head, tell you what's going to happen, but being there, you have to adapt quick. You have to adapt quick, and it's tough. Every veteran, as they served in any war, learns as you finally get into combat, it's nothing you thought it was going to be like, and nothing of what you thought something happening to the person at your right or left, it would ever look like or hear, as the screaming, the yelling, the body's coming apart, trying to save someone with the bleeding. It is a reaction that you fortunate are most likely able to take, and then you live on from that day for the next day. And you just, from that day on, it's all about coming home. But you have to adapt, and those who have been there know you just adapt. It is just something in your body allows you to do, at least in my case and so many others.
That must be hard to come home with PTSD and all the rest of it. And I know that a lot of people just sort of relive events in their minds after they come home. And that's what's really frightening, too.
You know, when we came home from Vietnam, PTSD, there wasn't such a thing. That was never even talked about. It was no title to it. You just came home, and when I got out, I served 3 tours in Vietnam. When I came home, my release, the final words were, grow your hair out, get a job, and don't tell anybody you were there, because the times back then were not in favor of the war, and definitely not in favor of the veterans as we came home.
And they're still not in favor of a lot of people that came home, and a lot of times they don't even realize it. I watched some of the parades yesterday and some of them this morning, and the sad part was there were hardly any people there.
Yeah.
And that's what's even sadder. They're forgetting, and then they showed the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier with their changing of the guard and everything, but there's so much more, seriously. So
there's so much more behind it, and so many don't realize that, because they never have had a family member involved. And I guess that's a learning experience that needs to be more through this country. It's a slow, hard process, but it needs to be done.
I know. My uncle fought in World War II, and he was there when they blew up the Japanese, and that must have been horrible, too. So I'm going to ask you this chapter really got to me. How did you focus on your man and then the mission where you were managed to survive by yourself? How did you deal with that was it 12 days or more? I was like,
12
oh
days,
God.
11 nights. Yeah, 12
That's what
days,
I thought. I got
nights.
That right. I got that right. How did you feel? How did you keep your sanity and realize that, you know, you're going to make it? You're not going to give up. How do you do that?
Fran, I guess you go back to your training. This wasn't something that was planned. When I was in charge, of a reactionary squad to protect an artillery battery. We did what we had to do every day. We did our patrols, ambushes, and everything. We moved a lot. As the artillery battery moved to protect the infantry battery, sometimes few days it seemed, sometimes every few weeks. As they moved, we moved to concertina around them, and we done patrols a 5-mile radius. But as we moved that one time, and as we were moving out, it was always half the men would go up there, prepare the grounds, as the artillery would be set. Then the final of the reactionary squad, we'd come in and close it out. But that day, as we were being choppered everything out up into Khe Sanh, the weather just changed. And there was 2 chopper loads of ammunition, of weapons, some minor food in that. And that's all that was left to go out. And the weather just changed so quick as we loaded the last choppers out. They couldn't make it back. So it wasn't something I was prepared to be alone. I didn't plan on being alone. And I never thought I'd end up being there for the 12 days and 11 nights. And I definitely did not ever think of what would happen through those next coming days.
So you just took one
day at a time, and each day you got more anxious. You got more, in my case, as the book spelled out, I got more frustrated. In a simple word, I was pissed off. I was angry, and I was angry at the skill of the artillery company at that time. But you don't know what's going to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen. And as things, after so many days, happened, as the book details out, I reacted on what my training brought me. And each time, I didn't know the results. Each time, I was fortunate. And as you recall, what happened through each incursion that happened while that went on, how I was fortunately able to survive, and the injury I sustained, and it's a mental thing that will never go away, never, ever go away.
Did you ever send the book to anybody? Did you send the book to the Marines, to the Army, to any of the military? Did they read this?
I'm sitting here with the book in front of me.
I'm going to walk around with this in my bag, because if I see anybody that looks like anybody, I'm going to just hand it to them, because I would. That would be me. I mean, there are a lot of veterans around here, a lot of police, and after this show, I'm going to contact my nephew, who is a current veteran, and I'm going to find out what he knows. I'm going to give it to you at the end of the show. I did find that organization, and they do exist, and I have the phone number.
All right, thank you. I've given the book to a few senators. I sent it to each of the large media outlets. I'm talking the ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox. I sent it to all of them. I sent it to the Commandant of the Marine Corps. I sent it to the head of the VA, VA Secretary. I sent it to the President. My problem is I don't know if they ever get it because everybody has got so many layers of protection.
Yeah, I know.
And on the network shows, figuring somebody there might be able to bring attention to it, and it's just no response. So the person I sent it to at each of those large networks, did they ever see it?
Probably not.
I don't know. So, yeah. I also sent it to the Jimmy Kimmel show. I sent it to the Ellen DeGeneres show. Again, did they ever receive it?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea.
You know what I would suggest? I would suggest that you start, and we have something, I don't know if we have a local Channel 12 up here where you are. I would call the local channel where you are and bring it to the media, because around here, Channel 12, the local media would pick it up in 10 seconds. And that might work. You never know. The local newspaper, the local local station might look for a very good story, a human interest story. Better than Ellen, and because I sent my children's book when I first made it. They said to send it to the Today Show, the producer.
As I'm not a celebrity, I'm a nobody to them. I'm not a politician. I'm not a celebrity, and that's what I figured. And that's what another gentleman from the shows I've been doing told me. He says, look who they have on the shows. They're either a politician, some type of movie star, singing, or they don't have a common person on. So, you know, and the book is about trying to reach out to all the veterans, trying to reach out to the veterans' family, but also everybody out there, because there's not just the cause I'm trying to resolve to get some old medals I earned for my Purple Hearts. And again, the book explains why I'm chasing those Purple Hearts. But it's also the Agent Orange cancers. I've had 3 Agent Orange cancer surgeries, as you're aware. The Agent Orange cancers eating the veterans up, and they're just, it's kept quiet. So I'm hoping enough people buy the book and read the book, they might know somebody who might know somebody who can get help and for this cause. It's needed. The Agent Orange cancers are eating us up alive. It is a slow, debilitating thing that takes one part of your body, and as they cut that part out, if you survived it, fortunately, then it goes to the next part. If you survived it goes to the next part. Eventually it goes to the blood, and then it's all done. Time is up. And that's how they explain it to you, and that's what we're going through. And it's a slow, horrible death. Anybody that's had any cancer knows, going through all the therapies and the chemos and the surgeries, there's nothing good about it, and their family members know that. So I'm trying to reach out, hoping that people will read the story and understand maybe it's something that they can help with or know somebody who can help with.
It's scary. Maybe even the head of a hospital near you might even care. You just don't even know. You never know. There's a show called Untruth. It's Untold Truth. It's on channel. It's on cable. Untold Truth deals with people that have illnesses that nobody knows what to do with. And you might even want to contact them. My husband got me started watching on it, because my niece is going for nursing, and I'm learning how to understand it. And Untold Truth, and then there's Mystery Illnesses. Those are two shows on cable that I know deal with exactly what you're saying, illnesses that nobody else can figure out or help with. I don't know why, I just thought about it.
Well,
so,
Agent Orange,
you never know.
Is an illness that they can never cure. They'll tell you that up right up front once you're diagnosed.
I'm sure.
They can never cure it. All they can do is care for you. And again, each person's body, each veteran's body reacts different to it. Some, the first time it hits them, it's over with it, you know. I had it hit my heart, had multiple heart surgeries. I fortunately lived through. Most don't live through that surgery. I was very fortunate, and I can't say I wasn't. You know, but I've had prostate removal from the cancer surgery. I've had kidney for the cancer. But I've been very fortunate going through these things. And I'm hoping I can reach out and reach the right people, and somebody could step in on behalf of the cancer vets from this Agent Orange. and that's all you could do. We can keep trying. We can keep trying is the best we can do.
What about the definition of two headshots? That has a meaning when you're doing your mission. What does that mean?
Well, as I got to Vietnam, I was attached to the Sartori Battery. I had a battery X-ray squad. I was the senior corporal at that time. So as I came on board, he told me as we went out of patrols, ambushes, as we encountered the enemy and the firefight was over, you walked up and you put two shots in their head. And he told me the reason was that he had been in a couple of firefights and the Viet Cong weren't dead. And they rolled over and then fired again or had a grenade in their hand and pulled a pin.
Mm-hmm.
So he said to make sure that that could not happen to you or the men around you. As you walked up after the firefight was over, anybody who wasn't, you know, if someone was just strictly wounded, you took him. But if he was appeared dead, you made sure he was dead. You didn't want to take the risk he was holding a grenade. You wanted to make sure that that couldn't happen to you or the veterans around you.
That's scary.
It's something else you live with. It just became a reaction. You did it. You didn't have time to think about it. You just did it and walked on. And you thought about it many times as you grew older. Believe me, as we grow older, the memories are coming back strong, really strong.
So this is what really got me, because it has to do with the title of the book, In My Mother's Honor. The cover is very compelling, too. You wouldn't let them assess your injuries and fly you to a hospital. Why? Why did you decide that you didn't want your mom to know? How come?
Just before I went to Vietnam, my mother was 8 months pregnant. My father died of a heart attack. She got a call at home that her husband was taken to the hospital. Presumably that back then they didn't have that technique of... Anyway, she collapsed from the news, fell on her belly, and killed the baby. So she lost her husband and the baby. So when I came home a couple months later to tell her I was going to Vietnam, she told me that I couldn't go because if she heard I was wounded or killed, it would kill her. So I made her a promise that she would never hear that I was injured or hurt. And that way she would never have to worry about it. Well, when I was over there, as I learned, if a corpsman or doctor touched you, someone showed up immediately at your parents' door, in my case, because I didn't have a wife, at my parents' door, and I felt it would kill her. So as I was wounded the first time, second time, and third time, I cared for myself. I was fortunate enough that the corpsman and the doctor in one case, they let me inject myself, give me morphine pills, wrap me. I let me sew myself up to one, tape myself, and that way she would never hear. And so I made it through three tours, injured multiple times. And my injuries, I did not lose a limb. I still have shrapnel on my body. I have a lot of scars on my body from those things. But I made it home and I kept my promise. And that's something the way I was able to do it. So when the trauma specialist wanted me to write the book, I thought that could be a good title for it because I honored my mother and I kept my promise to my mother. And now I didn't realize at that time when I refused the treatment that I was turning my purple heart down. So as my mother passed and my grandchildren found out about things, they said, Grandpa, go get your purple hearts. So I've been chasing for over 10 years trying to get my purple hearts, battling for my old purple hearts with all the paperwork, everything they've needed I've complied to over and over. Mm. It's just a battle that goes on.
Yeah, I know. I saw all the documents at the end of the book. They're very compelling, too. I mean, Military Order of the Purple Heart, instructions for filling it out. You did everything right. Plus, I have all the other things in the back. Yeah, I see that.
I tried to include so when the readers would see the book, they see that, you know, like when I was promoted to sergeant there, I didn't know. I showed the actual promotion that they're still fighting and giving me to this day. I showed the letters from the hospitals and the doctors stating I was wounded in Vietnam. I showed the x-ray showing shrapnel on my body. I mean, I don't know what else I can do. I followed the rules, yet they still battle me to this day. I'm releasing that promotion and releasing those purple hearts, but I'm not going away. I'm not giving up.
I don't think you should. You know, that's my kind of way of doing things, too. I don't give up until I get what I want. There has to be a congressman or a senator in your local area or a local TV station that'll pick this up you know, like a Channel 12, or I don't know what your local television station is, or your congressman that might have just gotten elected, or your state senator that just got elected, if you went to elections over there, I would imagine that somebody wants to look good, or your mayor, or even just anybody in a hospital that you go to, maybe even a local chief of staff of a local hospital might help, or even a small one. You just never know. So what went through your mind when you saw, I mean, that must have been scary. I mean, you see the enemy for the first time, and it's your job to take care of all these men. How do you deal with that, and how did they gain your trust? Because that's scary.
Fran, they gain your trust after being alongside you. How do you feel when it happens? You are shaken in your boots the first time, believe me. There's everything else. You are, in my case, I was into an instant sweat. I was into instant shake. And after the first shot was fired, it was just training. It was just the training kicked in, and you did what you have to do. And when it was all over, the first time, the second time, the third time, and on, it became, fortunately, more of a routine. Not that you never were nervous every time before that first shot, but not to the extent of the very first time. But it became a training on what you needed to do, what you needed to do to survive, and then to help the vets around you that were injured. That was just became a reaction, became a routine. Again, seeing all the bodies torn apart around you from your fellow vets, that never goes away. It never, ever goes away. If you have in my case, a fellow Marine die in your arms, never goes away. You know, the last words, the tears, the mumble, it just never, ever goes away.
Well, certain things you just relive every single day, I imagine. That's horrible.
Even with, you know, they keep you on the meds sided a little bit, as I've explained to the psychs. This is going to go away while you've calmed it a little. It's going to go away the day I die, and never before that. And I just don't see that being different with any other vet. That's something we live with.
Yeah, I know. My nephew, like I said, he's in the staff sergeant in the Army, and I often wonder why he volunteered for 3 tours in Afghanistan. And why he would do something like that. Yeah, and he came back. He's married and everything, but he came back a little odd, too, I would think.
It isn't odd. You're in another place. And I try to explain to any, especially my kids, my grandkids, and any friends, if you ever see a vet sitting in there quiet and staring, try to go up and talk to him. He's where he doesn't need to be. When they're in that glare, and I'm a perfect example, start talking to him. Talk about anything, because he's locked in somewhere, and it's not always a good place.
I know what you're saying.
So a few words of anything could get him out of that.
Just how you're doing could get him out of it. I know.
Any little simple thing, you pull him out of it. And that, to me, I try to tell anybody around, if you see me, start talking to me. That's what I need. I may not realize it at that time, but that's what I need. I need somebody taking me somewhere else.
So when you got home, how did your family adjust to this, and how did they realize you needed help? And tell us about your mom and your family, how they rallied around. You were lucky because they supported you. They supported everything that you do, and they still do. You were lucky. A lot of people don't have that.
I was very fortunate. My mother, you know, I still lived at home when I got out of the Marines, when I came home from Vietnam. And I lived at home for a few years till I got married. I had a brother in the Navy, another brother in the Army Air Corps. And I mean the 1st Cavalry. And they were all part of it. So we just knew what it was all about. And you really never talked about it, Fran. It never was talked about. You know, my mother a few times told me, tell me what really happened over there. And I would just ignore the question. And any vet, we just never talk about it with each other. My whole life, it's never been talked about. My wife and children found out about what happened to me just before I released this book, when I was drafting it up. I told them I was writing the book.
Wow.
I let them read the transcript. Now, they knew Dad and the husband had scars all over his body. They knew I was waking up screaming at night, but they never, ever asked me. And I'd never talked to about other vets when I go to the hospitals. I just sit there quiet and mind my own business until I was called. It all came out when this book came out, and that was all because of this trauma specialist I was required to see for 7-8 years. His name was Rob Smith out of the Heinz VA in Chicago.
And he did you the biggest favor by making you talk about it. Because, you know, I learned a long time ago, when things bother you, if you don't talk about it, it only gets worse. I've been there, done it, know it. And
you know,
that's good. I know.
Some of the things, Fran, I just talked to you about a few months ago, I had a breakdown talking about. I was almost there with this.
Mm-hmm.
I start soaking up in the voice, and I'm able to talk about it a little bit more, but not to still all the detail maybe that people might want to hear. To me, this
mm-hmm.
is enough detail. They don't need to know more than that.
No.
The drama, that I mean, and I'm talking drama in the night sweats, the night yelling, all that never goes away. And now that's something my wife still lives with, and I give her all the support and courage that she's gone
mm-hmm.
through, you know, putting up with me. She has said multiple times in the middle of the night, she's got up and run and hid in the closet, because she didn't know what I might do when I was into, like, a night rage,
mm-hmm.
sound asleep, not knowing I'm doing it. And then all of a sudden I wake up in a dripping wet sweat. And she has just been an angel. I will. And all the wives of all the veterans, they need to be
mm-hmm.
respected for all they're going through.
I don't think people realize that. I don't people understand it. Well, he's married to her. Okay, she's going to, you know, handle it. A lot of people can't. A lot of people walk. I've read a lot of books where the family just walked away, or the wife couldn't handle
it
and walked away.
Yeah, the wives and the family of the vets, they need to be given all the kudos there is out there for their support.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. So it started when you asked the VA for help and you had some surgeries. How come you had trouble, and why did the other facilities step up to help you? You were lucky with that. Otherwise, it would probably be, it's bad enough, but it would have been even worse. How come they didn't want to do the surgery? I know that I have a family member, won't say who, that has something wrong with his back, and he needs a biopsy, and they won't do it because he doesn't have health insurance, so they're making him wait, which bothers me a lot, too. So how come they wouldn't help you?
It took me over 2 years, 2.5 years to get into the system for the veterans, and many vets have gone through that to start getting their care. I did have a lot of surgeries performed by the VA, but my heart surgeries, I was out of town, and prior to me going out of town, I was diagnosed with a ascending thoracic aorta and an aneurysm in the top part of the vein coming out the top of your heart, and they just sort of blew it off. They said it's a 4.3, don't worry about it. Well, 5-6 days later, I was out of town visiting my eldest daughter, son-in-law, and 4 grandchildren, and had all kind of chest pains. I went into the hospital there, and they right away ran all kind of tests on me to tell me that aneurysm was already at 5.7, and that they also found my heart valves, both of them, mitral valve and aortic valve, were leaking through, and that I had clogging of the arteries, and they only gave me 5 to 10 days to live if I didn't have the surgery. In calling the VA back in Tucson, where I live in Arizona now, I was being treated at the Tucson VA, they never answered my calls. I sent them what's called secure messaging, never returned them. The hospital called, because when you're out of town as a vet, you're supposed to go to the closest hospital, which this was 13 miles from where I was staying. And I was trying to get the approval for care, and nobody responded. And finally, the doctor there said, it was like 4 or 5 days later, if we don't take you in now, you might be dead in the morning. So they took me in, and that bill still remains open. The VA is still fighting paying that bill. It was $1,789,000. It still remains open on my neck to pay, yet the surgeries are due to Agent Orange cancer, which I'm, you know, all certified as Agent Orange, conceded by the veterans and all that. But they're come up with all these rules as, we didn't follow procedure. I didn't check in and get it approved. Well, we have all the letters showing that. And I will say, finally, a few weeks ago, the VA in Washington, D.C. has reopened this case to look at it again. But still, I'm getting nowhere with my Purple Hearts and Sergeants promotion. Again, I hope the listeners would please take the time to read my story. And hopefully, if they can't, they might know someone who can help the Agent Orange vets and possibly help with a few of the issues I'm going. It'd be greatly appreciated. It's going to take that right person knowing that right person.
Well, I'm going to put this out later. I'm going to email you the number of the agency that I did find that helped me. It was my mom. When they did you ever apply for Medicaid or Medicare? You're probably eligible for Medicare. You should have that automatically at a certain age.
I'm 72. Being a veteran out of the VA, I only have Part A, the veterans cover everything else.
So you don't
the
have
veterans
Part
are supposed
B and...
to, the veterans, no, because of my ratings, the veterans have to take that over. You can't have both the way they explained it at the VA. So they take it over. They become like the Part B, but unfortunately they're not standing up for their Part B. And that's the battle I'm having with that bill. I've had all my other, I've had back surgery, neck surgery, shoulder surgery, kidney, bowels. They've done all the surgeries, and all those were paid because they were done at the VA. This was an emergency surgery outside, away from home.
I get it.
And they're fighting it because I didn't have it done at the VA. Well, the surgery I needed, as the book details, there's not a doctor in the VA that could have done it successfully. I happen to be at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in California, and there's one surgeon there and one surgeon in Cleveland Clinic, they said, who have had success with a patient living doing that ascending thoracic aorta replacement. So I have a hose now instead of a vein.
I understand what you're saying. With my mom had a pulmonary thrombectomy. We were supposed to go to Columbia, then Montefiore. Nobody could do it. They sent us to the University of California in San Diego, and there was only one doctor in the whole world that created this. And if we didn't go there, she wouldn't have lived for 17 years, and they had to pay us. And as far as medication, do you get that? Because Walgreens has their own special card that you can get.
I get my meds from the VA. They give me all my meds. I don't have a problem getting my meds.
Okay.
It's getting this bill paid and getting my old promotion and getting my Purple Hearts is what my battle's about. Again, this is an enormous bill. This isn't a $20,000 bill. It's $1,789,000.
That's
scary. It was intensive care. There were five surgeons for 12 and a half hours, five surgeons. And then they took a six-hour break, and then they came back for another 7.5 hours. They said they had my heart on the table for close to 7 hours out of my body.
I believe it.
So then I was intensive care for 9 or 10 days. I don't remember exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So the bill was enormous. But again,
I know.
I've got all the paperwork submitted, and they finally have reopened that case, and I'm hoping this time they follow through.
I hope so for you. Did you ever try, there's a private plan, I don't think it matters if you pay for it, that I had for my mom. It was called Epic. And Epic has nothing to do with Medicare, Medicaid, or any of those. It's a private plan. If you make less than $100,000 a year, they will take you. I know this stuff because I dealt with it for years with my mom. And we were paying $20 a month, not even. So whatever wasn't covered in her meds for Medicare and Medicaid, we got from Epic. And you might want to look into it because basically it's an elder plan and it has nothing to do with Medicare, Medicaid, or VA or anything. So you never know.
And I just wrote that down and I'll look it up after the show.
I don't know why. I know too many things. So in 2005, you had two jobs. How come they never paid, and why didn't the lawyers? That would drive me crazy. How come the lawyers didn't help you to get back the money that you need?
I was a union pipe fitter on Chicago Local 597, and after 13 years, I started my own business. I was doing, as my business grew 20-some years later, I had multiple large jobs, but two specific jobs going on who didn't pay me when 2005 when the big recession hit. And they just said they were behind on bills, so we had a lot of what's called change orders. That's increases in cost for the jobs, and they just paying all those off. Well, these change orders were $1 million some in both cases, and when they didn't pay those bills, I had to get my own lawyers to go to court, but I ran out of money. I was not a company with millions and millions of dollars behind me, and after 2 years in court, I ran out of money. The bank wouldn't give me any more money. So the lawyers aren't paid. They walk away. And as the opposing lawyers told me, we'll drag this lawsuit on for 7-10 years if we have to put you out of business. They come right out and said it. Mm. They knew I was a small business. They were as bold as can be. The one from the candy company and the one from the other large company, their lawyer wasn't as bold and brazen and I will call rude, But he basically told me his guidance from his people are just drag it on. Through law, they are allowed to drag it on, and they know I'll run out of money. And I did. I went bankrupt. So we lost the business, lost our home, lost everything we had. So that was at age 65. So my wife and I went into retirement after all we thought we had done for ourselves, totally broke. We went into retirement with $8,000 in the bank. That's what we were allowed to have. That was it. And then we have lived since then. So do I make under 100 grand a year? Guaranteed. I'm on Social Security and VA money. That's.
And I found that number for you that I will give you.
We've adapted. And we've learned to adapt, and we live on. And it's just our life now. This is what we learn to live. You have to learn. Again, like in combat, we learned to survive. My wife and I, we had many crying nights. How could this stuff happen to us? We worked hard to get to where we were, and it was taken away because of our legal system, you know, to us, was incorrect. Again, both of these jobs we had done, we had finished. They were using, in this place, the candy company was using their building, making money on the product. Same with the other one. It was a pharmaceutical. Job was totally done. They were making the money. But money got so tight for these large corporations, they just stopped paying their bills, and they didn't care. And I happened to hit two at the same time, which put me out of business.
Well, I'm going to email you also, text you on LinkedIn. I found that number. There is an Epic Healthcare in Arizona, and I have the number here too.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Fran.
You know what? You don't know if they're private. So when I even called for myself, because my husband made too much money that he couldn't get it. But for other people like my mom or yourself that make less than $100,000 a year, they may be able to put you in a better place, or maybe they know somebody to put you in a better place. You just don't know. This drives me crazy. So, what else do you need besides you often believe what happens to you? Are you going to write any more about this? Are you going to tell anybody about this? What about getting an interview with a local newspaper to tell them what your story is and get a
podcast? Again, I've been trying in Arizona up in Phoenix to get contact with all the radio stations, TV stations there, and zero response. I sent letters. I sent copies of the books, and, you know, I get zero response. So is it a story they don't want to touch? Is it getting to the right person? I really don't know, but it's not for lack of trying. All there's left for me to do is go stand outside their window of the building with a book in my hand. I hope someone will say something to me. That I have not done. But I have mailed them copies, and I have wrote them all letters. Every major station and every major paper.
What about the bookstores?
Barnes & Noble, again, I'm a nobody. I found out to get a book in Barnes & Noble, you have to pay to have it there.
Library interview. I know. What about your local library? They wouldn't take it either? Mine is terrible.
No.
They won't take it because they said you don't have a library agenda. But I have 15 five-star reviews. I mean, and I did a blog, and everybody knows I'm a radio host. And yet, what about a human resources of a hospital? Maybe they know somebody.
The Tucson VA hospital won't touch it because they're involved in not paying this bill for my heart surgery, so they don't even want to talk about it. And that's the only place they go for treatment.
What about Cedars-Sinai Hospital or Cleveland Hospital, one of the hospitals that you went to? Maybe they would, human resources, you just don't know.
Cedars-Sinai has been dealing with the Tucson VA trying to collect the money. I have been very fortunate. They've been kind enough not to beat up on me and go for collection. They understand that it's a battle with the VA, but they can't promote the book. They're not allowed to. They have told me that. But they are still trying to get the money for themselves, naturally. And you know, what I have found out, and this I found out from the collections department at Cedars-Sinai, is they do all the heart care for the Los Angeles VA, and they settle all the time for 30 cents on the dollar. So the VA is not going to be paying this $1,789,000 like I'm facing. The VA is going to pay 30 cents on the dollar.
God.
Again, what is this all about? Why is it so, again, if the people look in the back of the book, once they read the book, they're going to see copies of everything I've been doing, showing what I've been doing, and again, doesn't make sense that I have to battle like I'm battling. It's just a big jumbo bureaucracy.
I guess the only way that you have to get there is if you have to walk in. You have to walk into the hospital or wherever and hand it to them and say, "Here, what did I do wrong?" Or you actually walk into a television, local television, and say, "So here, I'm here. Can you help me?"
I've done that with the Tucson VA many times. They don't want to see me up in the county anymore. I'm not allowed to go there anymore. I'm allowed to go there for treatment and nothing to do with my open bill. Beyond that, you know, the VA and the government and talk about the PTSD with the veterans. Any veteran who has to battle to get treatment, in my case, battle to get a bill paid, and I'm not the only one in that instance had a bill out of town. All they're doing is compounding what you're dealing with. You get, then you get all tense, and then that night you relive everything again. It sucks it right up out of you. Mm-hmm. It's just part of our life, and they talk about you don't need it, yet they do this, what I call the delays, constant delays with you. They just rile you up and cause grief for you. It's uncalled for. The system still needs more changing. It's been changing. It still needs more changing.
Well, I agree with you. Before I forget, on Wednesday, Tess Gerrinson will be here with her movie, Island Zero. We got an exclusive on her new movie that is just coming out. On the 20th, Vincent Zandri, Flower Man. And on the 26th, a former DEA SWAT officer, and Bo Wagner will be here with the Network Exposed. On the 11th, 28th of this month, Artie Van Wy will be here. He's a 9/11 survivor. He's got PTSD and a whole lot of things too. And he wants to talk about his story, the fact that he has not ever, ever gotten over 2011, September 11, 2001. And he wants to talk about it. On the 4th, we have New York Times author Matt Coyle. On the 6th, we have Jeff Bond. And on the 10th, we have a panel show with 6 New York Times authors. On the 12th, we have Cindy McDonald. On the 17th, Vincent Zandri. And to end the year, Every Wicked Man by Stephen James. And that's just December. And January, February, you just never know what's going to happen. So before we end, this is hard to deal with. And I'm going to, you know, put this out there. I'm going to put the show out there in about 5 minutes. What do you hope readers will learn? If you can tell people the message that you want them to send, what about the system needs to be changed? If you could change something about the healthcare system, I mean, they're screwing up healthcare all over the place. I know that. What would you tell them to change for veterans and for everyone, basically?
Right now they're doing this program called the Choice Program, and they say they want to make it so the veterans can go anywhere they want. It's not set up that way. It's a slow – if I was to go to the Choice Program, I've tried to use it twice. It takes me about 4 to 5 months to see a doctor outside the system. And they mentioned and brought up that they want to be able to give you a card as a veteran where I could walk into any doctor, any hospital, and they will immediately see me. Well, do it. That's what they need to do. They need to create that card where I can go to any hospital. I don't care if it's a cancer center or a heart center or any kind of a trauma center, and they'll just accept me. Because right now they won't accept the VA card we have. And with this choice they're talking about, it doesn't work like they say. You can see certain doctors, but it takes 4 to 5 months for all the paperwork to go through for that to happen. So they need to make that happen for the veterans. They need to make it work for the choice so we can go if we don't think we're getting care fast enough at our local VAs, where we can just go somewhere else and get the care we need, or choose a doctor with a specialist that we feel maybe more comfortable with, who has more experience than that doctor that may be being offered to us. But I'm hoping that the people, again, will take the time to read the book In Thy Mother's Honor, and that they will learn and hopefully be able to connect with someone on the Agent Orange Cancers to find and get more word out about that, and hopefully someone maybe get a right connect to Health Up to collect for my old medal and promotion. They can
there
get the book.
There must be websites that deal with it.
Pardon?
There must be websites that deal with this. I'm going to look it up after, that deal with Agent Orange cancer and contacts. I mean, if there is one, I'm going to find it. I can't believe that there's no one out there. It's so frustrating. And my thing is that if you're denied care and something, I mean, to me, my first words were when I went to take care of my mom, if I went into, well, we went into the hospital, they knew me when I walked in. They knew better than to even tell me no. I said, if something happens to my mother, I'm bringing it out to the media and it's going to be your fault. I hold you responsible. And when they try to take away her home health aides because she had acute care, acute Alzheimer's, BNS tried to take it away, and HRA called me, and I said, that's okay, you can come. And if she gets a tachycardia, her blood pressure goes up even a half a decibel, I'm going to make you pay for it. They never came, and I won the case. And mm-hmm. that's what gets me. You might be allowed, seriously, I don't know how it works in Arizona, because you don't have a high income, you might be entitled to a legal aid lawyer to help you for free. These are the things that I did for my mom. And mm-hmm. I can't believe that it's sad that you can't get Medicaid, because you definitely qualify. You definitely qualify. But Epic is private. That's different. And that would give you your medication and your hospital and your doctors, which is what she did. She had Medicare, Medicaid, Epic, and the other one you might want to call is AARP. AARP is also private. I pay for that also. And they have a supplemental plan, which I have. It's Plan F. I mean, I have been through all of this stuff, too. And it's a lot of money, because you're paying through Social Security. You're paying through health care. You're paying everything. That's what gets me. And you're paying through your Social Security. You're basically paying for your Medicare. You should be able to get Part D through Social Security, and you can't? That doesn't make sense.
It's
everybody else.
It's a nonstop. I will call this Epic, as I said. I will look them up, and I will call them and see what that's all about and how that works and see how I fit in there. Thank you.
And I'm going to give you the number afterwards. And before we end, there are other websites. We can learn a lot from reading your story. But what is the most compelling thing that happened to you when you were in Vietnam and when you came home? What would you say the most important thing that you want people, besides the fact that you're Purple Heart and you deserve a lot more than that, What was the most compelling thing? Was there one person that stood out the entire time that you'll never forget, that made it so that you could survive?
No, there was one person who created grief for me with my 12
okay.
days and 11 nights. I have no person.
No.
That to me, every Marine at my side done the best they could at every moment of every day. I would give nobody any more valor or respect than each and every one of them.
You were lucky. You were lucky, because a lot of people, you know, don't have that any kind of support or anything. So this is a compelling thing. If your wife could talk to everybody, what would she say? Because we have a few more minutes. What would she say to the public? What would she say to have people help you to talk? Do you ever speak to different groups, support groups? Do you ever talk to different church groups? I mean, you never know.
No,
it could be a minister or a priest. I mean, these are just my things that I would do, that I've done for my mom.
Up until when I wrote this book, man, and this trauma specialist, again, pumped me all those years to get the information out, and that's when he asked me to consider putting it in writing. Nobody mm-hmm. ever heard anything from me, and I never wanted to talk about anything. It was just something I felt I needed mm-hmm. to die with, because most of the people can't understand what a vet has gone through in combat,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to talk about it. It is nothing to be discussed because of some of the questions that may be asked. You just don't want to talk about anything. And talking
mm-hmm.
about it, you relive it. You don't want to relive it. You want to
mm-hmm.
forget it. You want it put away. So going in front of a group was never in my mind. It's still not in my mind. I'm doing these talk shows on a request of, again, this trauma specialist, feeling it might help me, and I feel it's helped a little. I won't say that, because I can talk a little more, but there's still so much I don't want to talk about and so many more things. It's not that easy.
I know what you're saying, and I do understand. I won't tell you why I understand, but I do understand. There are things that a lot of people don't want to talk about, and then you just say, well, maybe it'll go away, and it's not. But the trauma specialist himself doesn't know anybody that he can connect you with. He wouldn't know. I mean, he's amazing that he got you to this bar.
He was back in Chicago, and I have not talked to him ever since. And do they know anybody who could, I mean, get me on a talk show or something? I wouldn't even know that he would. He just works at the VA hospital 5 days a week, you know, all week long. That's his life, to try to help the veterans.
Well, there are a lot of other, I don't know how you would feel about it, and I don't know if they would do it, but they might. I know a lot of other people that do Blog Talk Radio, you know, the same thing as I do. And
yes.
They might. If I could ask, that would be up to you, if they would, you know, take your story and listen to it and have you on their show. There are enough people that know me every day, and would they might. I could ask. There are quite a few that do shows like this, like I do, and that might, you know, want to talk about your book or just might want to talk about it in general. But that would be up to you if you can talk to them about it. They're not anybody that's going to ask anything that's going to put you on the spot or make you feel uncomfortable, because that's not. I'm going to make a phone call after this too to somebody that if she'll do it. But where can everybody learn more about your book and your work? And what are the final words that you would like to give to everybody before we close?
They could learn more about the book and everything, maybe more about me. I have a Facebook page. It's in the name of the book, In Thy Mother's Honor. They can read all kind of posts there, read all kind of questions and answers. They can come up with a question. I do my best to answer everyone. Where can they learn more about the book? To buy the book, you can get it at Amazon, or you can get it from the publisher. Publisher is 800-788-7654, and that's direct from the bookstore. That's the places they can get it. They have to order it, because, again, you can't get it in Barnes & Noble. I'm not part of that elite group. I'm not a main author. I'm not a known celebrity. I'm just a veteran trying to get the word out to hopefully help other vets and clear up some issues that I have. And I would hope everybody would just respect everybody around them, and no matter vet, non-vet, and let's move forward. Make it the best we can for each other.
Well, I have one more question, and then I'm going to give you, I have the numbers over the phone. I can give it to you. I could either tell you the numbers over the phone, or would you rather just say send them to you on private message and link it, and I can just send them that. Maybe that's better. I do have that agency and whatever.
I don't know if all your listeners want all that information or not, but whatever you feel is best and acceptable with. And if you want to contact any other stations to have me, I'd be honored to be on anybody's show.
I'm gonna ask one or two people, because they owe me. They'll do it. I don't know if they'll do it, but I will ask. I will ask them. But this has been very, very, very enlightening. This is very, very interesting. I have a magazine that comes out. It's coming out in December. It's called MJ Magazine, and it's for writers of everywhere. If you decide that you want to write an article or write something about yourself and you want to share it in writing, just send it to me through LinkedIn, and I will be more than happy to put it in my magazine. Everybody reads it. And it is on Amazon. And it is on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, I have to tell you, it is. It's called MJ Magazine. My sister died of a strange heart attack, and I decided, in order to honor her memory, and because she dared me to do this radio show, I named my radio station as MJ Network, and my magazine is MJ Network, after my sister, Marcia Joyce.
Thank you. And you said you'll send me something on that, and I'll be glad to write something for you. Thank you.
I will definitely. Now, I want everybody to listen. I want everybody to read this book. I want everybody to have a very nice day. Thank you so much for doing this. I will give you all the information in 5 minutes. Everybody have a nice day, and bye.